With me this morning is Zingiswa Losi, who is the president of COSATU. Zingiswa, great to have you with me. And I've been meaning to engage ever since we saw you in the White House, in the Oval Office, talking on behalf of South Africa, or speaking on behalf of South Africa, rather. Give us a sense. I know some time has passed now, but take us back to that moment.
Thank you for having me, and good morning to your listeners. And indeed, time has passed, but of course, issues are still at the table. And I must say, for me, it was an honor to be part of the Team South Africa on our visit to the United States, led by our President Cyril Ramaphosa. For me, I would say that looking back, even at that moment after the meeting, my conclusion was that the mission that we went for happened at a critical time, but also gauging by the outcomes of that particular meeting, it was a success, because what we went to do was to reset the political diplomatic relations, but also to be able to sit down and talk about the trade issues for both nations. And when we left that closed meeting, we had all agreed that we are resetting those diplomatic relations, and that those that are responsible for trade in both countries should begin to talk to one another. And we think that and hope that that then would have followed by the Secretary of Commerce in the United States of America and our minister here at home, Minister Parks Dow, and many other relevant departments in South Africa with their counterparts in the United States, especially now that we're also preparing for the G20 of the heads of state, but we are already underway with the sectors under G20 that you know that would have been taking place. And now, in terms of labor, we are going to George this week, weekend, to also do the final leg of that sector before the actual G20 in November.
So before we talk about where we are now from a trade perspective, because obviously the 1st of August is a big line in the sand, and we're still looking at this stage at 30% tariffs on South African exports into the US, I want to still just stay with the White House for a moment and talk to the fact that you stood your ground in terms of going into that session, because they actually wanted to cut the delegation from 10, the South African delegation, to 7. And you were potentially on the losing side of that equation, but you held your ground and made sure you got into the Oval Office. Talk to me about that level of assertion and confidence to make sure that you weren't dropped from the delegations, Zingiswa.
I must say that when I got a call from the presidency for me to join the mission, I had left everything that I was supposed to do here at home in terms of my work. And I flew 18 hours to get there. Not for me. When I land, then I'm told that the delegation has been cut off, and therefore I must watch the engagements at the hotel room. That's when I refused. I said, it cannot be. We're talking about numbers here, not necessarily individuals. So if the issue is numbers, find a number that is going to go inside Oval Office and give that number to me. Because I flew 18 hours to speak on behalf of the millions of workers in this country and the working poor. Their voice must be heard. So it would be a disservice to them for me to have left and not having done what I was expected to do. And so when I engaged the president and his team, I don't know whom they moved out. I mean, a lot of places there. You had your administration, you had your security detail, you had everyone that was supposedly to go in. But what I was told is that everything is sorted out and I would be part of the delegation. And I found my name there. I found my name at the Oval Office. And I was not part of security. I was not part of administration. I was part of the delegation. So it was a good feeling that for me, you do not pull back on the last hour when you are told that no, you are no longer going to be able to perform the duties and the responsibilities that were expected of you when you are still there and no one is going to speak on behalf of your constituency. And I'm glad that I stood my ground because I think it did pay off at the end, being part of that Team South Africa there at the Oval Office. And so it was such a humbling experience, but also I do appreciate President Ramaphosa having given me an opportunity to speak, because you don't just speak, you must be allowed, be given a chance to speak. And I say thank you to the President of South Africa, because I don't think I would have been allowed to speak if it were by President Trump, because after Mr. Rupert, he was ending. He was not going to allow me to have a bite onto the discussions. But of course, the president said, we are here as a tripartite alliance in terms of business, labor, and government. And therefore, one key important critical stakeholder is here with us, and let us hear what she has to say on behalf of her constituents. I didn't appreciate that moment.
Did you know beforehand that you were going to be given the opportunity to speak? By all accounts I've heard, there wasn't much coordination before the engagement in the Oval Office.
No, I had no idea. I had no idea. I don't think any of us expected to speak at any point unless asked to make a point. I did not think that at that moment in that space where we were introduced to the media, because that was not the actual meeting. The actual meeting that we went for happened after. This is what South Africans did not see. What we saw was the introduction by the U.S. government to the U.S. media and the people of the United States of America, reintroducing the delegation that is coming from South Africa to see the U.S. president. And I guess that's how introductions are done. It is at the White House, at the Oval Office, in the manner that it had happened. But that preceded the actual closed meeting that took place after. So I did not expect to speak. I don't think anyone expected to speak. You would have noticed that some two ministers did not speak. I guess they would have also expected to be directed to say something where the president would have felt the need. So for me, that is why I say that it was a privilege for me, for the president, to have allowed me to at least have a word.
I want to hear all about the closed door session, because I think you can give us some great insights there. But before we leave the Oval Office, you have received positivity and negativity. Some say you were quite harsh on South Africa itself in terms of being a violent nation and using the examples that you did in terms of old women being raped in the townships, etc. How do you respond to that criticism? As I say, you've also received a lot of positivity.
Look, people are entitled to how the interpret what one says and how they take and think that that position or the place that was it was an important place. Already South Africa was painted in a worst case scenario, that there is a genocide of white people in South Africa. Already we were there. Actually, the reason why we spoke about the issue was to counter the notion that there is white genocide in South Africa. And one had to put another side that it is not spoken about. That if you want to deal with issues of crime. Let us deal with them holistically. And I had to speak for those that are always forgotten, that there are Black women, elderly, young, who represent the majority in our country, who are also in the farming areas, in the rural areas, far away from the cities where even an emergency help could come, who are victims of violent crimes in our country. No one speaks about them. Their voices is not heard. And somebody had to juxtapose what was being made for us to debate there with another side of what we are witnessing. But also to say at the end, there's crime in South Africa. There are violent crimes in South Africa. Women are being killed on both races. We have a racial, we have a crime issue, not a race issue in South Africa. So I think for me, that had to be said, because it seemed as if every time, remember speakers before me did say there is no white genocide. There is no white genocide. So it felt like until you say that crime affects everybody in South Africa, and South Africa, indeed, you can Google it. Even if I did not have to say it, you Google, you put it there and you ask, what is the violent nation in the world? South Africa will be popping up on the top five of those. It is not something that I created. I had to say it to address this notion that we were even had to be shown a video that was playing. Crosses on the highway, they represent white people that have been killed in massive numbers. You know how it has been projected. And no one speaks about those that are even victims, domestic workers, farm workers, who are victims of violent crimes in the farms. Those crimes are also perpetrated by farm owners. But we were not there to say farm owners are guilty of this. We were saying crime is a problem, not race in South Africa. So I think my point came through and it settled. Perhaps that is why I was the last to speak to make that point. And also what I said after, can we now talk about the issue of why we are here as a delegation? Because we're here to reset the relation. We are here to talk about high levels of unemployment, the trade relations. We have a goal that we think that it is important for us to talk about the issues of tariff and many other issues that will hinder progress in terms of trade. And what kind of trade are we talking about, so that we don't lose the investment that we have, we don't lose the jobs, but we're able to create a potential of more jobs being created, so that we address what we always call triple challenges: the unemployment rate that goes high, in particular with regards to young people, the levels of poverty in our country, and inequality. Can't be comfortable in saying these things, verbalizing them. We must be able to have a plan in how we're going to say, this is how we're going to grow our economy in order to address these issues, and indeed address them, just like other countries do.
Talk to me about the meeting after the introduction. What was the sentiment? Did it feel hostile? Did it change completely?
It changed completely. What you saw at the introduction and what happened behind closed doors was completely different things. It was so respectful, diplomatic in a way. There were also icebreakers there when we started. You know, President Trump, everybody knows he's a golfer. We had golfers at the table, so the first thing that he did was to start with golf, you know. reminiscing in the years where he played with Annie Els, with Gary Player and other golfers. And we allowed that interaction, which some of us deemed as an icebreaker. And then at a point we said, we need to have a discussion on why we are here now. And those discussions were discussions that were just flowing. There was an acknowledgement by the United States of America through its president that firstly, South Africa is an important trade partner to the US. Its location in the African continent, it is a gateway to Africa. South Africa is the most industrialized country in the African continent. And therefore, you cannot ignore South Africa if you want to talk about any trade relations, any trade policy in the African continent. Secondly, it was acknowledged and agreed that two countries need to reset the diplomatic relations, and that now relevant departments must begin to talk to one another about all relevant discussions that are needed. And also the issues of tariffs came into part. The issue of tariffs in the auto sector that at times hinders investments from the manufacturers of vehicles. But also we raised the issue of tariffs generally that President Trump had given us before we even went there, which also has a direct impact to AGOA itself. And the renewal of AGOA, that we have been consistent as South Africa speaking to the United States of America, to the previous administration, now talking to this administration. And we all agreed that those relations and those discussions must begin to take place. And so President Trump also gave an undertaking that he will also be coming. Actually, he said the United States of America now will begin to participate in the G20 sector processes, building up to his presence in November, when the president of South Africa will be handing over the hosting of the G20 to the United States of America. Because remember, we are a troika. It is Brazil, South Africa, and the United States. We took over from Brazil. We must hand over to the United States of America. And this is how the closed sessions went. Our shock was the end part of that, where President Trump thought that maybe how the discussions went, he even offered to autograph our name tags that were there in front of us for each and everyone, and then gave the pen to our president to autograph his name tag at the table. And we had the exchange of those as we were parting ways and going back to South Africa.
Now let's talk about what has happened subsequent to the meeting. From an external perspective, we've heard very little about negotiations, whether it is the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition or international relations. The last public statement was the acknowledgement of the letter from President Trump to President Ramaphosa indicating 30% tariffs, and that we have now got until the 1st of August. Do you have any additional information that you can share with us at this stage?
Not quite. We don't have, at least from our side, much information. But what we can say is that, look, we are very concerned, in particular with the 30% tariffs that has been announced recently by Trump administration. Because to us, we think that has a potential of devastating putting devastation in critical sectors, as we said, as we explained when we were there, your automotive, your agricultural sector, your textile, your chemicals and jewelry, that are part of AGOA in the main. And And it does not just affect them. There's value chain even in those sectors. Does not affect South Africa. It affects the other countries in the African continent that are also feeding into the AGOA trade agreement. Just in the Eastern Cape alone, we are dealing with 900 jobs at Goodyear in South Africa that are already at risk. At Mercedes-Benz, they have paused production. This is the seriousness of this. And these are not just statistics that we are talking about. We're talking about real people. We're talking about breadwinners, talking about families. You're talking about the future of these workers and that of their children and their families. So we are fully supportive of the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition's efforts to negotiate a new fair trade deal with the United States of America. And we are here to urge the U.S. Congress to renew and even strengthen AGOA. And these are the engagements that we've been having. That is why I even mentioned that when I was there at the Oval Office, that I am coming here for the third time now. I've been here in the previous Biden administration engaging on this trade issue. And I am here again in the Trump administration talking about the importance of this. And we must say, when we are talking about the importance of AGOA, it is not just for South Africa. It is for both nations. Trade is important for both countries. There are pension funds of workers in the United States of America that are invested here in South Africa in these companies that you are mentioning. When we talk about in approximately over 500,000 of jobs that could be lost, we're talking about the ripple effect that it would have also in the United States of America. Because remember, some of the engines that we're building here, not even a complete a car, we even export just engines. So they are expected to be put into the vehicles that are manufactured there in the United States of America. So the investment that is done by workers' monies in these companies, U.S. companies that are invested here, is huge. It is huge. So trade is a win-win situation for both nations. And we are hoping that workers in the United States of America will be able to do as we do here in South Africa, to speak to their counterparts, the government in the United States of America, with business, to talk about the importance of trade and why AGOA is important and the impact that it will have. And we're hoping that other nations in Africa will be able to also say, if South Africa loses AGOA, as Botswana, we will be using so many jobs in the textile industry, in the auto industry, in the motor industry, and Lesotho, we will be losing so much jobs in the textile industry, and we're hoping that other nations in the African continent will also be saying that if South Africa loses this, this is the impact that it will have. Because I am telling you now, it is not just about South Africa. It is about the entire continent on these trade issues.
Are you getting very worried now that we are coming down to the wire, to the 1st of August, and yet we aren't seeing any visible progress? Are you worried?
Indeed, indeed. I think we must all be worried. We must all be worried. And I'm hoping that in a meeting that we will be having tomorrow evening, which is just a meeting between organized labor and business in South Africa, because we are not just sitting and waiting for us to be a network. We are engaging as leaders of trade unions and also with captains of industry in South Africa. We do meet at the Millennium Labour Council, which sits in evenings, in certain evenings on Thursdays, where we are looking into all these issues. Are we making progress? Where are the bottlenecks? What interventions do we need to do? That is why when we go internationally, you see a formidable united delegation. It is because we don't just meet when we are traveling. We meet here at home to really pay attention to these issues. We will be meeting again tomorrow, and I'm hopeful that part of the discussions that we'll be looking at is what progress have we made since we were in the United States of America up to now. And where needed, what we'll do, we will call those that who should have an understanding and a knowledge to come and brief us. And whether we are seeing these things on the same way, and what is it that interventions that ourselves as organized labor and business is expected of us, so that we know exactly the role that we must play, a meaningful one, a collaborative one, because we are all losers. If we don't work together, business, organized labor, government, and civil society in this country, we will all lose. So we don't have time now to point fingers. Ours is to work together. We share a common vision. We must be united. We must move together for a better country, for a better South Africa, for a better region, and for a better continent. South Africa, if we assert we are a gateway to the African continent, it must be seen. We must see it as South Africa. We must feel it as South Africa, that indeed here is a gate, and anyone that wants to pass through that gate must feel obligated to speak to South Africa first before they can even negotiate with our fellow African brothers.
Zingiswa Losi, the president of COSATU, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.